Namaste, welcome back to English History, Fact and Fiction, episode the 208th, Francis Drake. My name's Dick Newman, let's circle back. I figured it was time to get better acquainted with Francis Drake. His time in the podcast is coming, but let's get the lowdown. Why, you ask? He's a mighty hero. Is that enough? After this episode, you might actually decide he's a villain, a criminal pirate. Or you may wish to book a holiday to the Caribbean to visit one of the many sites to look for some Francis Drake hidden treasure. In his home port of Plymouth, there's a naval base named for him, and an island called Drake's Island, and even a shopping centre named for him. The British Virgin Islands has Sir Francis Drake Channel. Canada have Mount Sir Francis Drake and a mountain named for his ship, the Golden Hind. The Americans have Sir Francis Drake Hotel in San Francisco and Sir Francis Drake Boulevard. But after the George Floyd murder last year, US types aren't keen on Francis anymore because of his involvement in the slave trade. Well, stick around, because you might end up being a little bit forgiving of Francis with his involvement with humans who were black. A US type, Oscar Hartzell, even gave us a confidence scheme named for Francis Drake. He didn't invent it. Some guy promised to turn his mum $6,000 into $6 million, which he said was her rightful share of the huge Sir Francis Drake fortune. Oscar smartly saw it was a con done by a pretty shitty conman, so he thought he could do better. He contacted everybody he could with the name Drake, telling them that Drake's legacy was $100 billion. Whatever you invest in my fair dinkum scheme to get that legacy will be returned 500 times over. 1924, and he's got enough cash to go and live in luxury in London on the stupid investor's cash. The FBI will investigate and say there is no Francis Drake estate with any cash at all. British police will say hasn't broken any English laws, so we can't do a cracker. Will that stop the Americans from sending even more money? No way. In comes the cash. 1933, and the English will work out a way to extradite him to the US for trial. His investors will stump up another $68,000 for his legal expenses. He will score 10 years, and even in the slammer, another $500,000 comes in from investors. He'll die in the slammer in 1943. Lots of his investors will continue to believe in him and Drake's non-existent fortune. But it's not about con schemes in the US, it's about Francis Drake. We think he was born in 1539, so if we're in, say, 1575 in the main podcast series, he's about 36 for us. Born in Devon. Beautiful place where the intelligent people put the jam on top. The Drakes were gentlemen farmers leasing land from the local abbey. The abbey was dissolved in the dissolution, but the lease continued under new owner Earl of Bedford. Francis was the son of a second son, so they are probably just what you'd call okay in the money department. He is the eldest in his family with a nice 11 younger brothers. The Earl's son will be godfather to Francis, giving him a nice connection right there. The family will be off to Kent with the accepted story that the dad, Edmund Drake, was suffering religious persecution. But if you and I check the records, my dear listener, we may think this is a later invention by the rather famous Sir Francis Drake about his family. Here's the record. December 21st, 1548, whereas Edmund Drake, Shearman, and John Hawken, alias Hart, Taylor, late of Tavistock, Devon, are indicted on having, on April the 2nd year of Edward the 6th at Tavistock, stolen a horse worth £3 of one John Hart, and whereas William Master, Cordoner, and Edmund Drake, Shearman, late of Tavistock, are indicted of having, on the 16th of April, second year of Edward the 6th, at Peter Tavy, Devon, in the King's Highway, called La Crosse Lane, assaulted Roger Langus Ford and stolen 21 shillings and sevenpence, which he had in his purse. Yeah, looks like Dad was a pretty crim. He will get a pardon for it, but it's also interesting to note that his partner in crime was a guy, John Hawken, who may or may not be John Hawkins, who will be the great seaman who will work with Francis. Hey. Let's get to Kent, where Edmund Drake will set up home in the hull of a ship, probably something no longer seaworthy. It's in the River Medway, which Ted Somerset had decided was the place for ship repairs. Great, that means we've got lots of sailors, so our literate Edmund can take up preacher-fying. Young Francis will grow up surrounded by ships and shipping. Teen Ted's dead now and Mary's in. Edmund will wisely miss the Wyatt Rebellion, but make a living as a Protestant preacher, which might be a bit dicky. Young Francis will develop a bit of hatred for Catholics, and because of that Spanish film, Spaniards. Francis will be very pleased when Betty gets in. He's pretty Protestant. Here's a bit of a letter to Walsingham. Let us all with one consent, both high and low, magnify and praise our most gracious and merciful God for his infinite and unspeakable goodness towards us, which I protest that my belief is that our most gracious sovereign, her poor subjects, and the Church of God have opened the heavens in diverse places and pierced the ears of our most merciful Father, unto whom in Christ Jesus be all honour and glory, so be it. Amen. Yeah, so Francis thanking God there for putting in baby Betty to the big chair. Betty being in also means that Edmund can come back out to be ordained as a deacon and score a gig as vicar of Upchurch in Kent, where the beer is beautiful. There won't be much of an inheritance, though, for the 12 boys. Yeah, that's not going to make much money. Edmund will need to get them out to look after themselves one by one. Francis had been taught to read and write, and by the time he was 11 or 12, put to work in a small boat that tripped around with the occasional trip to France or the lowlands. Francis will become the pilot, and for a boy, this is like apprentice captain. This is great. It's a 7 to 12 year apprenticeship, but Francis will be fully employed, unlike other sailors or boys who are just hired for the trip, then it's be off with you. This sailoring gig, like preacher-fying, is great if you're born humble. You can actually get to the top of the pops by merit rather than breeding. Ultimately, you'll want your own ship, and eventually the old guy Drake's working for will die and leave the boat to Francis. Jackpot. Francis, though, has bigger plans than messing around with that little boat, so he will sell it. Some of his better sailors will be retained, and they're off back to Devon to meet up with the Hawkins brothers, William and John. He'll sign on as ship's purser, so he's in charge of the cargo, and off we go to Spain. The purser is also kind of like the HR guy, looks after the crew, particularly with the all-important pay. The Spanish hold the West Indies, and they want to keep them all to themselves, but their defences are weak, so lots of people get in there to make money. Mainly the Frenchies at this time, but that will be Drake's next voyage. The Spaniards had appointed a guy, Pedro Mendenez de Alvarez, to protect the West Indies by sea. He's the guy who gave the Frenchies the boot out of Florida. He can make all sorts of boasts, but the fact is he's got big old warships where the privateers have these small fast frigates and can just sail away from him. He'll order the construction of 8 frigates for his fleet. Spanish Phil really needs cash for his stupid foreign wars in the lowlands, but to make it worse, his treasure ships are big old plodding things. And in comes a new and dangerous enemy, Captain John Hawkins. Poor old Phil, he's been putting up with the English secretly funding the Protestants in the lowlands, and the English with the Huguenots privateering in the Channel, and now he's got John Hawkins sniffing around his prized possession, the West Indies. But there is a balance of power in Europe. Phil and Betty don't want to attack each other because France might hop in and make things tricky for one of them, and we don't know which one.
À nos enfants de la patrie, jour de gloire est arrivé.
Yeah, typical national anthem there. It's all about France is the best country and we're undefeatable. We'll always be victorious. Marvellous place. John Hawkins' dad, William, had perhaps been the first Englishman to challenge the Portuguese hold in Africa. The Portuguese have been complaining ever since. His thing was to go to Africa, pick up ivory and whatever, sail over to Brazil to trade with the locals there, which is also illegal, according to the Spaniards, then he'd get back to England, making lots of cash. He'll end up being Mayor of Plymouth and a Member of Parliament. He'll leave his sons, William and John, a nice fleet of privateers and merchantmen. Younger brother John is the brains of the outfit. John will cop a bit of criticism on one of his first outings, getting those black humans from Africa to sell as slaves, and our English aren't all that sure that they like being in the slave trade. Mind you, some pretty big names will be happy to be financial backers, and we'll soon get over our squeamishness once we see how much cash can be made. Portuguese, though, are very shitty. They've got a monopoly on the slave trade and want to keep it. The English government are hearing complaints of piracy from the Portuguese and illegal trading in the West Indies from the Spanish. Betty will ignore it. England's getting richer. Spain will order the West Indies not to accept slaves from John Hawkins. Of course, they say, but they really want slaves, so business as usual. To make it all cool, John Hawkins will go in with a bunch of hard-ass-looking sailors and demand a license to trade from the local officials, who can then say, "We were forced into it." Spanish will get up their guy saying, "Are you sure you're putting up resistance? We think you're not being fair dinkum. By the way, the only rigiditch license is issued in Spain. You can't issue any." For young Francis Drake, this is marvellous. He is a John Hawkins fan. We don't have much in the records of Francis's first trip to the West Indies. There was an older guy on the ship, drunken, penniless, signed on because he's got nothing better to do. Michael Morgan. He will later be captured by the Spanish in Mexico, so it's off to the sweet, kind, gentle, loving brothers of St. Dominic for him. Those guys like to keep records. He said, although at the time he, Morgan, could have found a priest to whom to confess, he did not confess but to God in his heart, believing that such a confession was sufficient to be saved. And he had heard said by Francis Drake, an Englishman and a great Lutheran, who also came on the vessel and converted him to his belief, alleging the authority of St. Paul, and saying that those who did not fast should not say evil of those who did, and those who fasted should not speak evil of those who did not, and that in either of those two doctrines, that of Rome and that of England, God would accept the good that they might do, that the true and best doctrine, the one which man would be saved, was that of England. On the deponent, Morgan, asking the said Drake whether his parents and forefathers would be lost for having kept the doctrines of Rome, he replied no, because the good they had done would be taken into consideration by God, but that the true law and the one whereby they would be saved was that they now kept in England. Yeah, so Francis Drake seems to be doing a bit of preacherifying on his voyages. By now, Biddy had buckled under pressure from the Portuguese and Spanish and told Hawkins not to sail to the West Indies. "Sure," says Hawkins, and off goes his fleet, with Hawkins being a good law-abiding citizen staying in England. Off we go to Africa first, and why bother buying stuff when you can just pillage Portuguese ships? Off we go to the Cape Verde Islands off Africa, and more Portuguese ships to plunder. Plus we'll take one of their ships. Now we can head to the West Indies to sell our stolen slaves. We'll meet up with some Frenchies who had also plundered some foreign ships to sell slaves. The combined Frenchies and English will talk to the authorities and kick off by offering a big fat bribe for a license. "No way, Jose," say the Spaniards. The Frenchies know how this is done, so they rounded up the rich fat merchants as hostages. The fear of Spanishville, though, is too much, so the Frenchies will just rob the hostages and set them free. This time, nothing will work, and the English aren't strong enough to force the issue. They've got 92 slaves in pretty bad condition, so these guys will be just landed and left as a free gift to the Spanish. The trip is a dud. The Spanish will turn this into a bit of sensational propaganda. "Our brave boys fought valiantly for our glorious fill, defeating the English and capturing their illegal goods." Nice lesson in losing for Francis Drake. He won't want to do that again. 1567, and Hawkins is putting together another fleet, including two warships belonging to Betty. Hawkins will be taking charge personally this time. Betty has assured the Spanish ambassador that he will be leaving Spanish stuff alone. "We're just off to explore Africa, looking for gold," she says. Hawkins will chip in nicely, saying, "Yeah, sure, won't be causing any offence to any foreigners." Betty has got plausible deniability. Off we go with some cloth to trade and straight into a storm with ships scattered and the flagship showing all the leaks it's got. The flagship is at risk of sinking and we need to find a port in a hurry. Here's a Spanish port, Santa Cruz, Tenerife, which is open to international shipping, but maybe not to John Hawkins. Two of his officers will then have a blue, with Hawkins intervening. One guy will turn on Hawkins. Oh dear. Mutiny. That gets the death penalty. Hawkins will rant at him, then give him a pardon, and all the crew think Hawkins is perfectly wonderful. Another lesson for Francis Drake. Off we go again with prayers twice daily and a sermon at sunset praising the baby Jesus as we hunt for human cargo. I guess we should consider that our Europeans at this stage told themselves that humans with black skin weren't actually humans, just very clever animals, which is actually what we all are. But they saw black people as non-humans and exempt from normal considerations. They will start to think differently in the future, but not now. Oddly enough, those Spanish types have started raising this as an issue, particularly with the treatment of Native Americans, but also with blacks from Africa. Hawkins was into either knocking off human cargo from the Portuguese or just slipping into an African village to catch people. Off we go then for a raid with 200 English who will manage to catch just 9 humans, but that particular village fought back, with a dozen English wounded and about 7 dead from poison arrows. Well done, those black people. Off we go again to find some Frenchies in stolen Portuguese ships. Hawkins will capture one and Francis Drake will score his first command. A small fleet of Portuguese slavers will be found and now we have their black humans as our cargo. Hawkins will get an invite from the Sapi people near Sierra Leone. They want to belt up their neighbours, so I could use the English help, please. Sure, says Hawkins, so long as we can have the prisoners. Off they go then with the black people from Sapi to belt up the black neighbours, and Hawkins has around 250 brand new slaves, with 8 of his guys dead. The English report that the Sapi people were rather nasty in the killing department and that they also ate some of their victims, but that could be propaganda. Hawkins lost a few guys to poisoned arrows, a few in that fight, a couple to disease, and a couple who got done by a hippo while they were in a small boat, but he's got 400 humans to sell. The place to sell them is the West Indies, and that's not a sure thing. His tactic this time will be to say, hey guys, we got blown off course. I've got a ton of soldiers who need to be paid. Could I just make a small trade, a bit of English cloth and iron, and say, just 60 black humans, so I can be on my way. And I won't forget a nice big fat bribe for you. He won't get a happy reply. I'm sure you know what straight charge the King of Spain, my master, has given, that no stranger be licensed to traffic in no part of the India. The which, if I should break before my eyes, I saw the governor, my predecessor, carried away prisoner into Spain for giving license to the country to traffic with you at your last being here. An example for me that I fall not in the like or worse. I pray you, therefore, hold me excused. Allow me to translate that Spanish for you, my dear listener. You fuck off, Hawkins. He will manage to sell bits and pieces of goods and keep going looking for another governor to con. Rio de la Hacha, where the Spanish had invented their story about beating the English. Francis Drake might be keen to get some revenge. Here's a report. Hawkins sent the Angel and the Judith to Rio de la Hacha, where we anchored before the town. The Spaniards shot 3 pieces at us from the shore, whom we requited with 2 of ours and shot through the governor's house. Yeah, fair dinkum gunfire this time, but as usual, there will be conflicting accounts with both sides saying the other attacked first, so we were just defending ourselves. And a lot of the English accounts were taken by the Spanish after a bit of enhanced interrogation. Hawkins will turn up and write to the local treasurer, reminding him that he owes for the 90 slaves put ashore previously, but hey, forget that. Then it's that story he tried previously. Blown off course, just need to sell you about 90 slaves so I can be off again. There'll be another fuck-off, so 200 English sailors will land and head into town. Spanish will fire a few shots, then run away, leaving the town to English occupation. Spanish will destroy the crops and provisions. English will threaten to burn the town. Spanish will say, go ahead. So the English burn the town. Economic war getting a bit out of hand here. One of the Spanish slaves will escape and say, hey, English, if you confirm my freedom, I'll show you where the Spanish keep their good stuff. And hey, presto, we have the Spanish precious stuff. Now the Spanish want to negotiate. Again, both sides tell a different story, and that, my dear listener, is the way of the world. Our government will tell us our side of the story, while in countries that aren't us, a very different story might be told. The upshot is that Hawkins will sail away with less of his slave cargo, but with a heap of gold. And what of that Spanish slave who had spilled the beans on where the Spaniards hid their precious stuff, he asked. Yeah, Hawkins handed him back to the Spaniards for execution. I don't like that. The next island is weak and unprotected, so by agreement the English will fire a shot in the air, demolish a building, then sell some slaves. He's still got a number of slaves, but also got a lot of cash, so he'll be off home. Storm, so it's head to Cuba for shelter, but the weather will take the ships where it wants to. They're a bit lost, but spot a Spanish vessel and ask for directions to the nearest port. Sure, mate, you're looking for San Juan de Ala in Mexico. Can't miss it. It's the one where the annual flotilla from Spain is headed. In they go, and thank our giddy aunt, we got there before that Spanish flotilla. Just some Spanish merchantmen hanging out. The plan is we're to fix up our ships, then get the fuck back out. Hawkins will try to reassure the Spanish that he's just stopped for repairs and has no intention of looting or killing anyone. Hey, we'll even pay for what goods we need. But we will take over the town and your cannon. Oh no, in comes the Spanish flotilla. 2 warships and 11 fully armed merchants. The English will prepare for a fight. A local Spaniard tells us, aboard these vessels they had many and very choice pieces of heavy bronze and iron ordnance, trained and loaded with powder and iron shot. He also saw many pikes and arquebuses and targets and corslets brought up and laid out upon the quarter decks and along the midship gangways of these ships. He saw many archers with bows and arrows and heavy stones take their place in the rigging. He saw them there, armed and ready to take either the offensive or defensive. They made ready with such brevity and dispatch that by 11 o'clock in the morning they'd finished the land works on the island and cleared their ships for action. Taking on the Spanish flotilla, though, could be a major international incident, so Hawkins will send a boat to the Spaniards, give them the story, just making repairs, and we'll be on our way before you know it. The two sides will agree to leave each other alone with a hostage exchange. They will be having a good time with sailors swapping yarns for the English and Spanish, but the Spanish admiral is up to no good. He's just sent a messenger down the road to get 120 soldiers to smuggle onto his ships. In come the Spaniards, which was always likely to happen. The brief given to the Spanish admiral and all Spanish ships was to get rid of anyone not Spanish hanging around South America or the West Indies. John Hawkins, being rather smart, trained his guns on the Spanish flagship, and not the other ships full of soldiers. Down goes the flagship, so it's bang away at the other Spanish warship, and we get 2 from 2. But the English will suffer losses too. Here's a report on John Hawkins. Our general courageously cheered up his soldiers and gunners and called to Samuel his page for a cup of beer, who brought it to him in a silver cup. And he, drinking to all the men, willed the gunners to stand by their ordnance lustily like men. He had no sooner set the cup out of his hand, but a demi-culverin shot struck the cup, and a cooper's plane that stood by the mainmast and ran out the other side of the ship, which nothing dismayed our general, for he ceased not to encourage us, saying, "Fear nothing, for God has preserved me from this shot, will also deliver us from these traitors and villains." but his ship is well and truly fucked. So it's get the men and cash off it, and in comes Francis Drake to secure some men and treasure. Then another English ship will come in to get the rest of our Captain John Hawkins. Oh no, the Spanish have sent a fire ship our way. That is, he set fire to one of your own ships and pointed towards your enemy. It's every man for himself, with sailors leaping away from their flagship to safety, and not all will make it. John Hawkins will manage the jump, but some are going into the sea with others left behind. We got away with just two ships and one is overloaded. That fire ship had gone off course. A few more guys have got away in a rowing boat, but some have been left behind to be prisoners of the Spanish, and that's something you don't want to be, my dear listener, a prisoner of the Spanish. Naval stuff is all a bit slow-paced, so the English ships are just outside the harbour preparing to set sail, while the Spanish are in the harbour and not looking to give chase. We can all stare at each other for a while. Next morning, and Hawkins will wake up with no Francis Drake in sight. To this very day, we have no explanation for why Francis did a runner. Hawkins wrote, "With the Minion only and the Judith, a small bark of 50 tons, we escaped, which bark the same night forsook us to our great misery." Where they were, the ships were in danger of reefs, so Drake, with little experience of that part of the world, probably just headed out for deep water. Drake is the one with too many men and not enough supplies, but then Hawkins is in pretty much the same boat. Drake's ship is also the faster of the two, so 4 months later he'll sail into Plymouth. Perhaps he just felt a duty to bring the guys home. For John Hawkins, though, this will be his last slaving voyage. He's had enough. Hawkins' guys were eating parrots and rats and boiling up leather to eat. Some asked to be put ashore to risk life with the Native Americans rather than starve on ship. Hawkins will limp home with guys dying from hunger. Somewhere up to 300 Englishmen are gone and only two ships survived. Lots of those poor old English captives ended up in the hands of the Inquisition to rot in dungeons or be burnt alive. Hawkins will arrive in Cornwall 5 days after Drake. For Drake, though, his career might be over already. But if he can get another shot, then he will be the avenger of those dead English. England may not be at war with Spain, but Francis Drake surely is. Now, Francis had gone straight to Hawkins' brother, William Hawkins, to give him the news. Hawkins had an email straight off to Cecil, telling him what's happened and looking for reparations from the Spanish. Either let us knock over some of their ships or take stuff they have in England. Obviously not an email, really, no. No, we haven't got email. So off goes Francis Drake on his fastest horsey. Let's check the situation. England and Spain had kicked off a proxy economic war in Flanders. It goes tit for tat, as all economic wars do, and ended up with the closing of ports to each other. The Flemish economy suffered. Flemings blamed the Spanish and started to get a bit revolting. Spanish Phil sent in hard man Duke of Alba, who has been rather harsh. English have been looking at other markets, and who cares about trade with Spain or Spanish territories? Guys like Hawkins have been messing around in the West Indies, despite Betty saying to Phil, "We'll stay away from there." Meanwhile, Alva escalated the trade war by seizing English ships and assets in the lowlands and, as I said, tit for tat, Betty seized lowlands assets in England. In came that ship with borrowed Italian gold headed for the Duke of Alva, but they had to stop in at England to avoid Huguenot privateers. So Betty has that cash and she will keep it. Into this shitstorm is riding Francis Drake with a tale of treachery and violence perpetrated by the Spaniards on we poor innocent English sailors. Trouble is, the whole thing's a bit embarrassing. Hawkins wasn't supposed to be in the West Indies, and we should be giving him a slap, not rewarding him. At this time, we're also expecting a visit from the Duke of Alva's guy looking to restore trade. In comes John Hawkins to London, and we have no idea how his chat went with Francis Drake. He will eventually publish his memoirs on this voyage, and it's not that kind of Francis, but he won't go with a full-on charge of desertion. Still, this will haunt Drake in later years. But happy times for Francis. He'll meet a nice Cornish girlie, Mary Newman. 4th of July, 1569, we've got a wedding. There will be no kiddies. Perhaps he was away at sea too long to get around to it. 1570, and Francis Drake will turn pirate. The Hawkins brothers will put up cash for two ships, but we can't find any commission from the government to make him a privateer. Seems to be acting on his own. Who cares what the government think about Spaniards anyway? Ordinary English hate them. It would have been easy to get a commission to privateer against Spanish in the English Channel. Either the Huguenots or William of Orange would have handed one out with no questions asked. But Francis likes the look of the West Indies. Doesn't matter, it's going to be a nothing burger. Later, Francis will write that it was a reconnaissance mission. Yeah, lots of failed military events get called that. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt, though, because he surely will find a land route in Panama that the Spanish would love to keep secret. This is where the top stuff, gold and silver, get transported. The Spanish picked it because it is nicely isolated. Here we go. The most frequented road of this district is that from Nombre de Dios to Panama, which is 18 leagues across very rough mountain country, rivers and treacherous marshes, and by which in trains of 500 or 600 mules normally used in this portage, and by the river Chagres in boats as far as the depots of La Cruces, are carried the money goods bought from Spain to Peru, and the silver and money brought thence. The city of Panama holds as public property a customs house or depot called Casa La Cruces, where the goods that come up from the Chagres arrive, which is 5 leagues from the said city by a very bad road, hard travelling especially when it rains heavily. This place is maintained by the city, having a humid and sickly situation. It has 47 chambers in which all the merchandise is locked up in the custody of a keeper. There is likewise maintained as public property another depot called Chagres, which is on the road from Panama to Nombre de Dios, 6 leagues from Panama. Now this isn't the West Indies, it's South America, or in fact it's that tiny little skinny bit between the North and South continent. So, yeah, quite easy to walk across. Well, apart from the mountains and marshes and rivers and so on. The Spanish then have a lot of cash in a place where they're hoping isolation will be the protection. You should put in hard men and cannon wheels, eh? They do actually have a couple of cannon, but not enough to protect the place, and it's a regular garrison. Once a year, the flotilla will come in, and we're all on our best behaviour, but the rest of the year is siesta time. That isolated road there has already seen Frenchies come in. Then you might meet local indigenous people who could be happy to kill you, and scariest of all will be the bands of escaped slaves. Fortunately for the English and Frenchies, these escaped slaves hate the Spaniards. They're okay with the Frenchies and English. Escaped slave bands have become so bad that the Spanish are thinking of not bringing any more humans who are black to the place. The matter which in this kingdom most urgently demands remedial action is the problem of dispersing the Cimarrones, black outlaws in rebellion in its mountainous, unpopulated interior. They are numerous, and such is their daring and audacity that they come forth upon the roads leading from this city to that of Nombre de Dios, kill travellers and steal what these have with them, if it be clothing and wine. So far, they have not taken money. They threaten to burn these two towns and have approached within an eighth of a league and frequently carried off negresses at work washing clothes in the rivers. Similarly, they can carry off negroes sent out for firewood and induce others to leave their owners as they do every day. The next year, and Drake will be back with just one ship this time. He will find the Frenchies are already attacking the top secret road. That's handy for Drake. The Frenchies will be back off to their ships, only to find Spaniards around the place. So the Frenchies are off taking the Spanish with them. Frenchies will be captured, so the Spaniards will return, and there's Francis Drake and his men, who are no damn froggies. These are English with their chests out and their upper lips nicely stiffened. And out of sight, of course. In comes a Spanish frigate, which will, unfortunately for them, find Drake. Sadly, the silly buggers won't surrender, but that's because they have stories about Frenchy sailors committing atrocities. Drake's policy will always be no harm to anyone who surrenders. The Spaniards will sail to shore with passengers hopping over the side to run away. In comes another Spanish frigate, and these guys will just hop over the side and get to safety too. Here we go, to plunder the ships and insert nice holes in them. We'll even leave a note. Captain and crew of this frigate, we We are surprised that you ran from us in that fashion and later refused to come to talk to us under our flag of truce. Knowing us and having seen evidence of the past few days that we do ill to none under our flag of truce, but only wish to speak with you. And since you will not come to courteously talk to us without evil or damage, you will find your frigate spoiled by your own fault. And to any who courteously may come and talk with us, we will do no harm under our flag. And who does not come, his be the blame. And do not think we were afraid of those ships, nor the others. By the help of God, it shall cost them their lives before they prevail over us. Now you have proof that it would have been better had you come to talk with us, for in the frigate you had not the value of 4 silver reals, done by the English, who are well disposed if there be no cause to the contrary. If there be cause, we will be devils rather than men. And we're back off up river to find a port and loot 3 small ships. We'll capture those. Further action will see Drake take a 12 more ships, or really the loot. Next it will be a frigate, but that was just a diplomatic mission. Drake will toss the dispatches overboard. It goes on with more ships captured and loot taken. All good things though must come to an end, so Francis will be off, but his name will be well and truly noted by the Spanish. Here's a Spanish letter to Phil. In search of this corsair, this city has sent out 3 expeditions, on which were expended more than 4,000 peso, and he always had the luck to escape. Once the fleet is gone, when the town and port are deserted, it is plain that we are going to suffer from this corsair and others, unless your majesty apply the remedy hoped for by sending a couple of galleys to protect and defend this coast and the town, which is in the greatest danger. In writing to Betty, the Spaniards will complain that Drake had scored £66,000 worth of goods. John Hawkins had scored about half that from 3 voyages. John Hawkins' tactics of a fleet with lots of guys is over. Big outlay, big risk, with risk increasing due to increased policing by the Spanish and Portuguese. Drake ran a small operation, getting in and out of places in a hurry. Hop in, get the goods, keep going, and it's worked a treat. He's the guy to copy, so other guys will copy him. At least 6 guys will get into the Caribbean, and the age of English piracy has begun. Here come the buccaneers. Before he'd headed home, Drake had scoped out a nice isolated bay to do some refitting of his ship and store some stores for future raids. Sadly, he hadn't thought things through. Some Spanish prisoners will be released there so they can go home and tell the authorities about Drake's hidey hole. The Hawkins brothers will offer Drake a larger ship that can take perhaps 50 men, and Francis is thinking that that would be enough to take the treasure house itself. 1572, and Drake is off again with his original ship, plus the bigger ship from the Hawkins brothers. 73 men and boys looking for danger and adventure. His younger brother, John Drake, will be the other captain. Now, Drake's got 3 pinnaces, early version of the longboat for shore work. He's got a year's worth of supplies, and he's off to his hidey hole. Uh-oh, there's smoke near his camp, and nailed to a tree is a bit of lead with some writing. It's from John Garrett, Drake copycat. Captain Drake, if you fortune to come to this port, make haste away, for the Spaniards, which you had left with you here last year, have betrayed this place and taken away all that you left here. I departed from hence this present 7th of July, 1572. In fact, Garrett had been the first Drake copycat, and some of Drake's previous crew had signed on with him and showed him the top secret boy's hidey hole. He gives a fuck, says Drake, and carries on carrying on with his work. Next day, in come 3 small ships. More Drake copycats from England. No sweat. They had more of Drake's old crew with them, and our top secret isn't looking too secure. Well, one of the 3 small ships was English and the other 2 Spanish, but now English. Hey, Francis, want to join up? Sure, says Francis, because now he has over 100 guys to knock over the Spaniards' top secret treasure house. Off we go then and capture a couple of Spanish ships with timber and slaves on board. Hey, black guys, what's the strength of the treasure town these days? Not much, but they have hard men on their way from Panama because they're scared of the black outlaw types. That's actually wrong, just the imagination of the slaves, but Drake doesn't know that. Off you go, former slaves, join your brothers and fuck over any Spaniards you meet. Said it before, These are English with their chests out and their upper lips still stiff. So fuck the reinforcements coming, we'll be going in at night. Drake had wanted to wait until dawn, but some of our upper lips are going a bit soft. So about 2 a.m. and the clouds part to give us some nice moonlight and we're off. It's row hard, you fuckers. A Spanish merchantman had spotted the movement and got a boat into the water so they could raise the alarm. Drake will cut them off, then we're on shore and straight into the gun emplacements to capture the few cannon. Enter the town and the Spaniards are waking up. We may have stiff upper lips, but there's no sneakers embedded yet, so we're a bit noisy. Off goes the church bell and the jig is up. Francis had a couple of guys with drums and trumpets, so now we will make some noise. Let's sound like a full army, even if we aren't. Around the corner and we're going straight into the militia, who will just fire us. Most of their shot went into the ground, but Drake will cop one in the leg, and that trumpeter will trumpet no more. He's dead. Yeah, a little bit of music there from the rollicking good fun Pirates of the Caribbean, which you, my dear listener, would know should have been Buccaneers of the Caribbean. English will return, shot to the militia and then charge. Around another corner comes John Drake with his guys and the Spaniards will drop their weapons and run away. Drake's got the town, but probably only as long as it takes for the Spaniards to work out how few guys we've got. Off goes Drake to the governor's house. Sure to be at least some of that treasure there. Let's see. A pile of bars of silver, of as near as we could guess, 70 foot in length, of 10 foot in breadth, and 12 foot in height, piled up against the wall. Each bar was between 35 and 40 pound in weight. At sight hereof, our captain commanded straightly that none of us should touch a bar of silver, but stand upon our weapons, because the town was full of people. And there was in the king's treasure house near the water side more gold and jewels than all of our 4 pinnaces could carry, which we would presently set some in hand to break open, notwithstanding the Spaniards' reports of the strength of it. So, yeah, Drake's going to leave the silver behind and go off looking for the gold and jewels in the treasure house and stride out into a tropical storm. Our gunpowder is wet, as are our bowstrings. The storm will last an hour, then we try to break down the door to the treasure house, and had you forgotten that Drake had a bullet in his leg? He'll faint. They will carry him back to the boat, but that door is solid, and that's it, we're off. Francis Drake should have taken that easy pickings, the silver. Greed can get you, my dear listener, don't succumb. Drake was annoyed, but his guy said, look, mate, we can find more treasure, but the real treasure is you, our dearest darling captain. You are irreplaceable and we all love you to bits. Let's have a nice group hug and sing Kumbaya. Kumbaya, my love, Kumbaya. Oh yeah, I think that was enough of that. Drake should be on his way back to England with tons of stuff, but he did bring food for a year. This may not be all bad anyway. The flotilla had just sailed off a couple of weeks earlier, so presumably the treasure house might have been a bit empty. Drake had certainly put the frighteners on the Spaniards, so they'll send an envoy, brave lad. Excuse me, oh mighty captain, do you happen to be Francis Drake, known for his kindness and compassion with his enemies, and can you tell me if the arrows you shot at us were poisoned? Just popped in to say if you guys need any provisions, I don't know, dunny paper or something, we'll be happy to provide. Our captain, although he thought this soldier but a spy, yet used him very courteously and answered him to his governor's demands that he was the same Drake whom they met. It was never his manner to poison his arrows. They might cure their wounded by ordinary surgery. As for wants, he knew the island of Bastimentos had sufficient and could furnish him if he listed, but he wanted nothing but some of that special commodity which that country yielded, treasure, to content himself and his company. and therefore he advised the governor to hold open his eyes, for before he departed, if God lent him life and leave, he meant to reap some of their harvest, which they get out of the earth, and send into Spain to trouble all the earth. Nicely handled. Off goes the envoy, laden with nice English presents. Maybe a pork pie and a pint of Kentish beer or something. The Spanish governor will send for 100 hard men from Panama and start digging defences. And he's got new cannon. This isn't going well, and we've heard Spanish ships are on their way. This was too much for Drake's new English partner, who will be off. Off you go, lad, said Francis Drake. I only want stiff upper lip types, not girly pirates like you. Okay, says Francis to his crew, here's the plan, lads. We'll take on Cartagena, the most well-defended place around. They absolutely will not be expecting an attack. There'll be another night-time raid with Drake and his guys in small boats boarding a Spanish ship. No need to kill the guards, there's only one old guy on board with the rest gone ashore to watch two dickheads dueling over a girl. The old boy, though, has information, and they certainly did expect an attack from the now-famous Francis Drake. Most of the ships then had moved to the protection of the town guns, except for one large ship around the corner. Off we go, and before you know it, the English are in control of that ship with the crew locked up in the hold. Next day, and Drake will take two more ships. Still, this isn't that good. He's here for treasure. And the treasure house has been reinforced. Drake will need to get some cash in transit on that top secret route. To do this, he needs local knowledge, and we've got those handy black guy outlaw gangs. Francis Drake will start to think about the black guys as more than just a commodity to be sold. At his raid at the treasure house, some guy named Diego had slipped away from the Spaniards and joined Drake as a manservant, and believe it or not, we had a friendship forming between a black guy and a white guy. Diego handily knows some of those black outlaws and will assure Drake that they will help him. Drake will give his guys a couple of weeks R&R while his brother John and Diego go looking for the outlaws, and Drake can scout around looking for places to establish depots. Okay, break's over, so Drake will capture half a dozen enemy ships to get provisions. Plus he'll trade with the indigenous Americans for goods. And John has made contact with the outlaws. All going well. The next shipment of treasure is not due for 5 months. Drake will set up a fortification with the black guys all being willing workers. The place will be named Fort Diego. Drake will be off on a reconnaissance mission, leaving his brother John in charge. In comes a Spanish ship, and John's guys, showing keenness and enthusiasm, will convince John to attack it. Bad move. He's not Francis Drake, he's John Drake. So, bullet to the chest, and Johnny's dead. Francis will return after having fun knocking over some Spanish ships. The Spaniards will try their best to get Drake, but their best is not good enough. Yellow fever, though, is good enough, and about half the crew will die. Things are going rather badly now, but in comes the news from our outlaw buddies. Treasure is on the move. Off we go, and it's just as well we've got those black guys with us. They will forge the trails, they'll do the heavy lifting with supplies, and knock up shelters each night. Very handy. The Spaniards are on high alert, expecting an attack from the sea. Nobody thinks Drake will be attacking on land. Now Drake will be up a hill, and at the top we get a view, and it's the Pacific Ocean. Only the Spanish and Portuguese have sailed that, and it's a mystery still to them. Drake will be keen to get into it. Time to set up an ambush, and it's all going well until an English sailor who'd been hitting the bottle went too early, and the Spanish ran away. Fuck it, now Drake's got to run away. Drake will get into a skirmish and take a small settlement just for the night before marching off. He needs a new plan, and it really is just as well he befriended those black guys. These Cimarrones, during all the time we were with them, did us continually very good service, and in particular in this journey, being unto us instead of intelligencers to advertise us, of guides in our way to direct us, of purveyors to provide victuals for us, of house rights to build our lodgings, and had indeed able and strong bodies carrying all our necessaries. Yea, many times when some of our company fainted with sickness or weariness, two Cimarrones would carry him with ease between them 2 miles together, and at other times, when need was, they would show themselves no less valiant than industrious and of good judgment. Oh, great. Then comes a Frenchy privateer, a Huguenot type. Drake can hear about the St. Bartholomew's Day massacre. He's also into navigation and is a handy cartographer, showing Francis his map collection. Drake's down to 30 guys who are weakened from disease. The Frenchie has 70 big strapping lads, so why not join up? Off we go, and we've top discipline this time. Nobody to get pissed, and wahoo, jackpot. The black guys knew how the packing went, so they told Drake, don't bugger around with the silver, we know where the gold is. There's way too much for us to carry it all away. We just need to get it to the top secret rendezvous place where our boat should be waiting. Sadly though, for our Huguenot privateer, this was his last raid. Caught a Spanish bullet. About 15 tons of silver will be buried around the place, but we can take about 40,000 pounds worth of treasure with us. Half for the English and half for the Frenchies. Off we go as fast as we can. It'll be a 2-day march with us knowing the Spaniards will be hunting us, but we'll get back to where our boat should be and find Spanish gunboats with lots of Spanish hard men and some artillery. That's not good. The nobody will get pissed rule had failed, and one pissed Frenchie had fallen into Spanish hands and spilled on the top secret location. Spaniards quartered him. Drake will build a raft. Yeah, he's going to head into storm-prone, shark-infested seas on a raft. Off he goes, the seeming dickhead, but this is Francis Drake on a raft looking for his boats with guys that had stayed behind, so of course he will find them. Yes, boss, they say we were heading to the top-secret rendezvous place, but the bloody Spaniards got there first. Timing, though, was with Drake. The Spanish arriving first means that he got to see them so he could avoid them. Drake has his boats back so it's we load up the treasure and say goodbye to the Frenchies. But Drake wants more. He wants that buried silver. Yeah, the Spanish had been out digging all over the place, but they'd missed 13 bars of silver and a bit of gold, so it was worth the effort. Time also to say goodbye to our new black buddies, give them some gifts, and we can head home. The surviving sailors will have more cash than most Englishmen make in a lifetime. He's left behind some very distressed Spaniards and a rather big reputation. For the English, this was a very large haul. In the totality of the cash Spain was getting, it's not that big. But he's hit their top secret treasure route. Worse, he had teamed up with the black guy outlaws, making the Spanish crap their dacks. And the black guys know how the Spaniards operate and pretty much all their secrets. Message from Panama to Phil. This realm is at the present moment so terrified and the spirits of all so disturbed that we know not in what words to emphasize to your majesty the solicitude we make in this dispatch. For we certainly believe that if remedial action be delayed, disaster is imminent. These English have so shamelessly opened the door and a way by which, with impunity, whenever they desire, they will attack the pack trains travelling overland by this highway. Worse for Spanish Phil, plenty of Drake copycats are heading to Panama. Sunday, 9th of August, 1573, and we're all in church listening to a sermon go on and on and on, but the congregation will start leaving. Francis Drake is sailing into harbour. And so we'll leave Francis Drake right there, knowing that he's already planned his next adventure. Yeah, so next week we'll be back to Betty if she's calmed down.
And I cop all this shit all the time and I'm sick of it. Absolutely sick of it.
Yeah, not yet, but I'm sure she'll be right by next week. I'll check in on Dudley.
You're a disgrace. Suck my dick and choke on it. Fuck you.
No, not going well then. And while Francis Drake was lazing around the Atlantic Ocean, I had a crack at The Last Viking by Berwick Coates. This is apparently number 2. I should have read number 1 first, I guess, but number 2 in a series 1066. So this will be about the Harald Hardrada invasion. This is a good one for the bus. It's not going to tax you too much. Harold Godwinson is the main character, and he's a marvellous character. You certainly don't want him running into Bill the Bastard, but of course you know that's going to happen, don't you, my dear listener? Berwick Cates has also got a number of other characters in there, but don't worry, they're pretty easy to keep track of. So, yeah, nice little read. The Last Viking by Berwick Cates, number 2 in the 1066 series. But for us, it's a matter of what we go out with. I reckon this week we might go out with an oldie but a goodie. She Began to Lie by the aptly named Christine and Catherine Shipp. Hope to see you next week. Bye.
And again the last sea line.